You've all heard of the famous teacher Milarepa in the Tibetan tradition. So Milarepa told his disciples that he had left all his valuables. So he told them that if they went and digged in a certain place, they would find a bag with something that he had left behind. So they all rushed out and started digging, and they found this little woolen bag. And excitedly they opened it up, and they found a turd. And so they complained, and he said, "Well, did you think I had amassed a lot of gold and left it? If that's all you think, you deserve that." We have to contemplate, what are we trying to get from life, from the world? Really, what? The silence is very valuable, but still we go back to life and we get so wrapped up in running, in rushing. It's not surprising. Our human minds are very divided. We're fragmented and fractured, because without waking up to our delusion, we get caught up in ideas. So ideas about how to practice the Buddha's teachings, and ideas about how to practice Christianity, ideas about how to practice Islam. The Buddha did not promote sectarianism at all. But we seem to have the nature to divide, to opinionate, and to hang on to our own views. Even in monastic circles, there is so much division, and so it is with everything in the world. So why is it that there's so much contention? It's just remarkable. So much. We can't hold things in the same way when deep within us we all work from different platforms, from different views. There are different ways of holding the teachings and different teachers, and there's so many differences because we follow greed, hatred, and delusion. We've done that from beginningless time. So we have to make peace with that. This is from Shabkar, the Tibetan teacher. "Your prime goal must always be to generate and nurture in your heart a love such that the pain of others is unbearable to you. Carry on like this until the birth of true compassion, natural and spontaneous." So with the metta practice, metta will take us to compassion. Metta is looking towards others with eyes of friendliness. And you know, the Buddha talked about spiritual friendship as being 100% of the path. But he didn't just mean pals to hang out with. He meant a different kind of friendship. A friendship that will help to sustain us through thick or thin, through sickness and death, through the suffering of this journey. We always think that when we're suffering, something is wrong. But we forget, or we don't realize, that we signed up for this realm, suffering and non-suffering, and it's a karmic result. We're on a very long journey. A journey of lifetimes, So we've lived over and over and over and over and over and over again with no memory of that. Some people have the gift to remember. The Buddha went back through many and many of his lifetimes, but when he was asked about going through those lifetimes, why he didn't continue, it was plain. Like, what is the point? They're finished. They're gone. And whatever karmic or karmic load that we have to contend with is the result. So we don't go back examining. It's kind of a waste of energy. Because we have to apply the energy in this lifetime to healing, to resolving the karmic load, to accepting it, acknowledging it. This is my condition. How do I deal skillfully with it? And if we apply ourselves in that way, that leads to our awakening, and that leads to a purification that will unburden us of what we're carrying. But we have to grow up spiritually. We have to mature before that can happen. And if our minds get caught up in the hindrances, wanting more, greed for sense pleasure, for all the gifts of the world, all the sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touch sensations, all of that, if we're obsessed with those things, we just create more karma to come back into form realms, sense realms, until we finally exhaust those desires. And that could just keep going on and on and on. The samsara is a revolving door, revolving gates. Born and die, born and die. Born, get old, get sick, die. We've been brother, sister, mother, father to each other over and over again. We've been in the animal realm, we've been in many realms. But we're in a human realm. And apparently, this is a rare birth, a rare opportunity. It's a rare opportunity, as they say about monastic life, rare opportunity, difficult to do, only solution. The only solution is develop spiritually, live a very good life, a simple life, a wholesome life, a benevolent life. But this is a fourfold sangha, not just monastics, but householders. And the Buddha set up this system where we depend on each other. It's a beautiful symbiosis. And by depending on each other, we help each other towards our spiritual destiny. I think that all beings are traveling towards ultimate fulfillment, whether they know it or not. Just like all streams that flow down a mountain, when rain falls on a mountain, it flows downward. The mountain slopes downward. The streams flow downward. Some of those streams dry up right at the top. Some of them dry up further down. Some of them reach the bottom of the mountain and form rivers. Some of them travel down the river to the sea. And when they reach the ocean, they evaporate and become rain again. So as human beings, we don't know how long we're going to live. But we have some ability to control the outcome. If we can see through the limitations of following sensory desires, following the tides, the troughs, the highs and lows of thought, of ill will, the vortex of ill will, which is very demeaning and disabling for us. We develop ill will towards each other, towards conditions, even towards ourselves, so easily. It's like fire clings to the wind and spreads so quickly. And ill will in the mind spreads to the heart and explodes there. It explodes. So we have to remind ourselves through our practice to help us develop the antidotes to greed and hatred, or greed and ill will, or the wanting of the mind and the negativity of the mind, so carefully so that it doesn't spread, so that it isn't contagious, not only to others, but within our own being, to the point where we become sick because of these energies. This is the power of the practice, to develop the antidotes. And one of the antidotes to ill will, perhaps the most powerful, is this practice of loving kindness, of friendliness. That's how we discover the treasure. That's our inheritance from the Buddha. The Buddha left us gold, the true gold. So we use this gold to turn this golden teaching, supreme teaching, into tools for our daily practice. So we don't just practice metta once a day, but we try to carry it throughout the day and find our weak spots. What makes us angry? What makes us angry? What makes you angry? Opinions? Destruction in the world when people are careless, they use the resources of the earth in irresponsible ways. They steal. There's a lot of theft. There's not only theft of objects, there's theft of nature. We are, just by our presence on this planet, abusing its gifts. But we got ourselves into this predicament. Our restlessness, yeah, mindfulness of breathing is the best agent to use against restlessness. But it's not just because we're being mindful of breathing, but because the practice of Anapanasati leads the mind to such a depth of calm. And the more calm we can be, then that's it. That's where the mind gives up the restlessness, because it finds its true home. Its true home is in silence, stillness, single-pointedness, stability. We become like a mountain, immovable. So when somebody speaks to us in a way that is dreadful, how can we practice samadhi at that moment? Well, the force of memory, if we're mindful enough, then our mindfulness has remembering in it, so we remember the samadhi factor. And we focus, instead of on the opinion about the words, we focus on the hearing of the sound, and we let the vibration of the sound permeate the body, because the whole body is much bigger than the eardrum. So by listening to a cruel word, a blaming word, a violent word, the eardrum maybe can't take it very well. We're so sensitive that immediately we become annoyed or agitated. But if we just stop at hearing and let that sound permeate down through the whole body, that gives us a buffer zone in which to diffuse the energy of that violence. Then mindfulness of the body will help us to remember the samadhi that we know. Even remembering it will give us extra stillness in facing that person. So we may not retort with an angry word. We may even be able, on the heels of that remembrance of stillness and rebirthing it in that moment, because we live our experiences through memory. So this is one way of bringing the Dhamma into the present moment, is remembering the Dhamma. So you remember your body Dhamma. And on that landing strip, we can take metta, goodwill, and offer it. We pull it up out of the stillness that we've developed. We pull up metta and we forgive. Feeling goodwill towards this person, they wouldn't speak like that if they were not suffering. This is someone who's obviously suffering deeply. So we can forgive their ignorance, their vile speech. Now, at that moment, metta becomes compassion. We've turned an enemy into a friend. We're not going to live together. But instead of someone that we are feeling incredible resistance towards, and anger is just bursting to come out, we've restrained it, and we've turned the mind to the wholesome, and we've let the vibration diffuse into the body, and we've transformed it, we've reformed and used that energy instead to bring up forgiveness and to understand their suffering. So we've not only turned the hostile force into something that we can skillfully be with, so there's a friendliness, there's a goodwill, not an ill will, at least a neutral will. But the neutral also can be a goodwill. It's much easier to go from neutral to good than from ill to good. In that process, there's a death. There's a death of the ego. This is an example of how we can die before we die. We can die to our attachments. In the middle of our worldly activity, we're not on the cushion. We might be in the office or out on the street. We might be in a store. We might be on the phone with someone. It could even be an email. But practice means repetition. So if we keep learning the ropes about doing this, then little by little, the voice of the Buddha is suffusing us with the knowledge of how to enact forgiveness, how to die to our attachments to self, the ego. How dare you? You can't talk. This kind of language, we've forsaken it. We've left it by the wayside. It is not a tool of Dhamma. The contemplation of death is really very important. It's a way of giving up the ego. It's a way of giving up the forces of anger and ill will, which, if this world could have less of that and more of this. We could all live together in this world, if, realm of suffering. But we have to try to bring forth boundless compassion. Boundless compassion is only enabled because the world is a realm of suffering. If there were no suffering, there would be no compassion. Why would we have to practice compassion? We would all be so happy. So when we suffer the insults of the world, this is good ground for waking up. Our suffering can be the gate, the doorway, the opening of the heart to unconditional compassion and unconditional equanimity. This is a practice. How difficult is it to bring up goodwill to yourself? How difficult is it to bring up goodwill in all the 10 directions? How difficult is it to bring up goodwill when someone is insulting us? It's difficult. So how can we nurture and generate in our hearts a love that cannot bear the pain of others? It's not that it's unbearable so that we run away, but it's unbearable so that we have more and more compassion, that we realize that karmically we may not be able to resolve their pain. So we have to use discernment together with compassion. That is the birth of true compassion, which is unconditional. We're not rejoicing in their pain, but we understand that this is like a law of karma happening, and we can't resolve it. But if they can bear their pain with our compassion, maybe they can bear it better. Feeling their pain without becoming overwhelmed. Then we can, with the awake mind, wish for a field of blessing for others who may be in terrible distress, but perhaps they too will be able to bear their distress. And eventually we work towards and wish for the awakening of all beings. So Shapkar says, carry on like this until the birth of true compassion, which is spontaneous and natural. So we won't have to try to feel compassion in the face of unbearable pain within us or others, but we have unconditional compassion, which is not defeated in the face of such pain, but it understands this is a suffering realm. I too suffer, everyone will suffer death in one way or another, sickness in one way or another, degradation of the body in one way or another. These are the factors of our journey, but the seed of enlightenment is still there, and the suffering is an opening for us to gain strength in the face of it. So that we, at least when the body dies, the mind can transmit its wholesome energy to a higher rebirth or to full awakening. This is a difficult journey, no question. But how do we use the suffering to cultivate the path rather than to hide from it, to avoid it? We can't avoid it in the end. But the suffering of the mind is the second arrow. That we can pull out. that we can resolve. And that could take lifetimes. So we start now, and we keep going.